And it's really great to see this much interest for coming out, particularly on a rainy night like tonight. So first, I just sort of want to introduce myself. I'm Chris Parsons. I'm a graduate student at Trent University and a contract instructor at Dalhousie. And I sort of, my academic interests are on sort of the left, but my background's also both as a student activist at King's, where I did my undergraduate, but also a labor activist. And I was involved in the Canadian Federation of Students, a number of other things. This is Kaylee, who also graduated from King's, and like me, was the external vice president and served on the national executive of the Canadian Federation of Students. She has a background not only in the student movement, but also in labor, and particularly feminist organizing. And she's one half of Go It Together Alone, which is a zine publisher.
Go It Alone Together.
That's what I have down there, yes. Go It Alone Together. Which changes the meaning. A zine publisher who put out some really good stuff in Halifax. I'm sure that if you sort of have been around the Anchor Archive or collect zines, you've seen a lot of her and Emily's work. We're both members of Solidarity Halifax, who are hosting this event. So what's the purpose of tonight's event? So the actions of students in Quebec have captured the imagination of a lot of folks in the city. And there's sort of various groups who have been of activists in Halifax as well as throughout Canada, who have been planning some actions in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in Quebec. In both the media and in activist circles, however, in Halifax and more broadly, there hasn't really been a chance to step back and ask what the meaning of Quebec's so-called Maple Spring is. So what we intend for tonight's meeting to be is a space for discussion and analysis. We want to try to have a conversation about what exactly the character of the struggle in Quebec is, and what that struggle means for those of us in Halifax who also seek to create a better, more just world. This is not meant to be an event planning meeting, but we hope that a serious political discussion about Quebec and the meanings of solidarity can inform the actions that people do take in the future. We also aren't trying to present sort of a definitive interpretation of the events in Quebec, but rather to introduce some ideas that we hope will become part of a wider and longer conversation throughout Canada and in the city. So basically, what we're going to do today is myself and Kaylee are going to briefly present some thoughts on the specific political and theoretical context of the struggle in Quebec, and then facilitate an open discussion. So first I want to introduce a few of the political questions as we see them, and then Kaylee will spend about 15 minutes or so talking about the structure of organizing in Quebec. Then I will briefly suggest some of the sort of theoretical problems I think Quebec presents us with. And the two of us are going to try to facilitate an open discussion for about an hour or so, and we're going to try to get out in time for people who want to join the Casseroles March to do so. So I guess sort of the four questions we sort of want to toss out there as a starting point to give you guys something to think about before we turn it into an open discussion in about 15 or 20 minutes from now is the first question is, what is happening in Quebec a revolutionary situation? And if not, what is it? The second is, what lessons can we take from the student activists in Quebec? And what pitfalls can we look that they've fallen into and see that we don't fall into them ourselves? Three, is the movement in Quebec a narrow opposition to tuition fees, or is it a wider resistance to austerity, or even a resistance to capitalism itself? And that sort of is a question about whether or not struggles like this naturally and automatically and necessarily become generalized struggles, or if they can remain sort of narrowly focused. And the fourth question is that sort of, what should activists in Halifax do? And obviously, I don't think we have definitive answers for any of these, but we see this as sort of a good starting point for a discussion we hope to have tonight that we hope will continue further. So I think Kaylee's going to start with some thoughts on sort of the context of the struggle.
Hi, everyone. So for folks who don't know me, like Chris said, my name is Kaylee Kennedy, and today I want to give a bit of background and context to what's happening in Quebec right now, specifically because I think that there is a lot of misunderstandings or just lack of knowledge about the structure of the student movement in Quebec and how it differs from the structure of the student movement outside of Quebec. So first I want to start by talking a bit about the players. So there are three student associations in Quebec. FUC, which is the University Student Federation, and it represents about 120,000 students at 15 member organizations. FEC, the Federation of College Students, which represents about 80,000 students at 23 student associations. And ASSE. And ASSE is a more radical student association, and it represents about 50,000 students at 25 associations, both in colleges and universities. And then many of you would have heard about CLASS, which is Assay's temporary coalition. So it's a coalition that was created by Assay in preparation for a strike, similar to CAS, which was a similar coalition that Assay created in the around the 2005 strike. It includes members of Assay, but also student associations that are not members of Assay, and it was founded in December of 2011. I think it's a bit important to give a bit of a background about where these organizations come out of. So FUC and FEC were both created in the wake of the failed strikes in the late 80s in Quebec. So there have been about nine. This is the ninth general student strike in Quebec, and some of them have been successful and some of them have not. In 89, I believe, there was a strike to oppose the cancellation of the tuition fee freeze in Quebec, and it fell apart partly because the most radical student association at the time was ANEC, which is the National Assembly of the Students of Quebec, and it had immense amounts of internal turmoil, and it was created. I think ANEC was created in the strike in the set in 74. ANEC came out of that struggle. And was very instrumental in the organization of strikes between 1974 and 1990, and then kind of fell apart due to internal conflict. And Assay actually was not formed until 2011, but takes its sees as its predecessor ANEC, and so both institutions, Assay and ANEC, organize based on the principle of direct democracy, and so the student associations, in order to be a member, you have to acknowledge that the general assembly of your student association is the supreme decision making body. So FUC and FEC have been around since the late 80s, early 90s, and came out of this failed attempt to organize against tuition fee increases in the early 90s, and since then have been definitely more conservative student associations, but also represent the global student union. So for example, at Dal, the Dalhousie Student Union, if it was let's say that we had a similar structure here, the Dalhousie Student Union would be a member of FUC. But the student, the DAS, or the Dalhousie Arts and Social Sciences Society, or the Dalhousie Sciences Society would be a member, would not be a member of FUC, but that would be the kind of size of association that would be a member of Assay. FUC and FEC generally organize on the global level, and Assay organizes more on the faculty level or on the CEGEP level. To give a bit of an idea about the timeline, I'm going to give a bit of a context from 2005 to now. So in 2005, there was a student strike in Quebec. It lasted 5 weeks, I believe, and it was about the canceling of the grants program. And the grants program was reinstated as a result of most of the grant system was reinstated as a result of that strike. But there was a lot of division that resulted from that strike as a result of FUC and FEC negotiating with the government without Assay. In 2007, the Assay called for a general strike because the government had announced that it would be increasing tuition fees by $100 a year for 5 years. $100, 2007 to 2012. And that strike did not happen, largely because there was still divisions from this the fallout of the 2005 strike, and so there wasn't a mass movement for a strike. So those tuition fee increases went through, and tuition fees went from about $1,100 to about $1,700, and so from until those FEHEX in 2007, between 1968 and 2007, tuition fees had only been frozen for the vast majority of that time. There were only 4 years, 1990 to 1994, where tuition fees were not frozen in Quebec. So in 2010, the government announced that they intended to increase tuition fees substantially in Quebec by about $365 a year for 5 years. So that would increase fees about $1,625. And so that would make tuition fees about $4,000 in Quebec. And right now, tuition fees are about $2,200, and that's in line. Not just people will say that Quebec has the lowest tuition fees, but that's also in line with the tuition fee levels in Newfoundland, and it is not that out of step with tuition fees in Manitoba and until recently British Columbia. So it's important to recognize that, you know, while the media has talked about how these tuition fees are the lowest in Canada, that's actually, yes, that's true, and Quebec has had the lowest tuition fees in Canada because students have consistently opposed tuition fee hikes or cuts to public education, but that their tuition fees are not out of step with other provinces outside of Quebec. So in March 2011, the formal announcement came from the finance minister that Quebec would be increasing fees by this $325 per year. And in August 2011 was when the official campaign to oppose tuition fee hikes came from students. So there was quite a long lull in what was happening, and there wasn't a lot heard of from the student organizations between that period of time, which is different from Quebec's other student strikes, which have been fairly quick to react. So in August, a campaign was launched, and the campaign built to a large demonstration on November 10th. And the march included about, in Montreal, the biggest march was about 20,000 people, which is large, but is like kind of pretty average in the world of Montreal protests. So in the biggest protest in the 2005 strike included the number that is agreed upon, I guess, by media would be 80,000, but the number agreed upon by student organizations would be 100,000, and it's the largest demonstration to happen in Quebec at that time. So November 10th, there's only 20,000 people in the street. It's definitely not comparable to the 2005 strike. So in the fall and in the winter, there was a caravan of student representatives who went to faculty by faculty, school by school, to talk to students about what was happening, and about the tuition fee increases that were being proposed. And this is the strength of the organizing that happened in Quebec. It's also, there is a long tradition and a long history in Quebec of departmental democracy, so democratic institutions within the department, in large part because of the University of Quebec system, there's not necessarily like a University of Quebec student association. There are federations of university faculty associations at each campus of the University of Quebec, but for example at UQAM there's a federation of student associations that represent the whole campus, but UQAM is only one campus of the University of Quebec. So because of the structure of the universities, students are organized in a different way than in most of English Canada. And also, CEGEPs are fairly organized, and in the broad, like really largely in English Canada, outside of maybe Newfoundland to some extent and BC, college students are not politically organized in other campuses, so they don't have necessarily political organizations. Their student associations may not be autonomous and may be staffed by university staff. And those student associations don't necessarily see themselves as having a political or advocacy mandate. So after this, you know, like, talking tour, this tour where they went and talked to all these faculties, strike votes began. Most assessments, people would say that the strike votes have started with folks who were easier to organize and were likely to win. So a group of 100 geography students vote to go on strike at Concordia, or, you know, a group of, a very politicized, very mobilized CEGEP is organized to go on strike. And so the first strike vote happened on February 13th. And all through February and March, students took strike votes and joined the strike. So on March 22nd, there was a demonstration of about 100,000 people in Montreal. At that time, there was about 200,000 students on strike. The scope of the current strike is very important. So right now, there are over 150,000 students on strike, which is more than at the peak of the student strike in 2005. And at the peak, about 300,000 students were on strike. Since a large part of the strategy of organizing faculty by faculty was also for faculty to take faculties and individual campuses to take action. So everything from students blocking their campus to students occupying the business school to, I think that one business school there was like a letting out of locusts. On the 22nd there was this big demonstration, and then following the demonstration on the 22nd, there was a series of economic disruptions. So that included, you know, blocking bridges, blocking streets, blockading the Bank of Canada, or the Bank of Quebec, the National Bank. There have been several kind of smaller in numbers, but just actions intended to disrupt people. On April 23rd, there was a large demonstration in Montreal, and that one is said to have had around 200 or 250,000 people at it. And the media really played that as being an Earth Day demonstration. But by all accounts, it was in a big way an anti-charrette demonstration, and that there were, you know, large amounts of students there, but also there was other causes represented, or other social movements represented. Since April 24th, there have been nightly protests, and these have ranged quite broadly in their numbers, so, you know, ranging from a couple of thousand to 20,000. And as I was saying before, this November 10th demonstration that had a lot of build-up to it only had 20,000 people at it. And that was the expectation. It's important to note that they weren't anticipating a larger demonstration. I watched a video today of some people talking about from before, like from talking about having a demonstration on March 22nd, and people being like, oh yeah, we're anticipating, you know, there'll be 20,000 people there, and that demo on March 22nd had 100,000. And so I think it's important to recognize that not even the people who were on the ground and the leadership thought that the demonstrations would be as large as they were. So since April 24th, there's been these nightly demonstrations, and then since May 23rd, there's been these pot-banging processions that come from neighborhoods. And for folks who don't know, that comes out of a tactic used in Chile, so that people could show their support wherever they are. So May 22nd, biggest demonstration yet. You know, numbers too hard to tell. somewhere between 250 and 400,000 people on the streets. So throughout this, the student associations and the government have been trying to, there has been some attempt at negotiation. I use the term negotiation, I guess, loosely. But what was really important is that FUC and FEC actually wouldn't refuse to meet with the government without class, which is not something that has happened in the past. And so the government presented an option of a higher tuition fee increase spread over a longer period of time on April 27th. And then on May 5th, students and government came to a deal. The deal was signed by Philippe Lepoin, who is the finance executive person of CLESS, but there was a lot of issues with what happened, and one of them was that students were expected to negotiate for 24 hours straight without a nap or breaks. And what's really concerning is that in that meeting, they asked they were in the meeting with government and trade union leaders, and they asked for a break, and both the government and the trade union leaders said, no, we need to get this done. And so, you know, I think that's something that's like, that folks need to be, I think it's important to know that while we talk about Quebec and what's happening there as being, for example, an anti-austerity, as moving into a movement against austerity, that there is a lot of struggles in having movements work together, and that those struggles still exist. On May 5th, this deal comes, students widely reject it, and Lynn Bouchon, who's the education minister at the time, resigns. And so that happened. The resignation came on May 14th. On May 16th, Josh Array announces he's going to put introduce Bill or Law 78, which we can talk about more, but is basically it would pause the academic year to the middle of August, and it levies heavy fines on individuals and student associations who choose to continue striking or encourage others to strike. On the same day, Montreal passes a bylaw that imposes fines for wearing masks, and those, it's interesting because the arrests that have happened in Montreal, almost none of them have come from either of these two legislations, and most of them have come from existing arsenal that police legal system has to charge protesters. But outside of Montreal, where the politicization has been very, very important, so in places like Quebec City, in Sherbrooke, in Gatineau, in, you know, outlying areas of the like Montreal suburbs, Law 78 is what's being used to quell dissent, and so I think that's an important thing to mention. And then on May 25th, students and labor unions have launched a challenge aimed at overturning Bill 78. So I probably have like a minute left, but I just want to point out a few things. I heard Philippe Lepoin speak on Thursday in Toronto, and someone asked him about the diversity of the movement and how things had been built through the building of coalitions, and he said flat out, this is a largely white French movement. There is largely not any coalition building that has happened outside of the student movement, and that it's not necessarily a very diverse movement at all. I read an analysis yesterday that said that there is a huge issue with sexist, homophobic, and racist chants in the protests, and also that there is, you know, a definite concern about the issues around or the involvement of Quebec nationalists within the movement. And so I think that I want to bring those things up because I think that they highlight some of the kind of struggles that the Quebec student movement is still facing, and that there is, that it would be a mistake, in my opinion, to romanticize this movement and not recognize that there continue to be these limitations. And then the other thing is that there's been a lot of calls I've seen from radicals about, or from folks who see themselves as part of the radical left, to call on student organizations to call for a strike in local regions. And I think that I read an article the other day that said, you know, it'd be really like, if your neighbor built a castle and spent all this time building a castle, they spent 10 years building a castle, and all of their community members like pitched in to build this castle, and then you and five of your friends said, hey, we can build that castle in a couple of months, eh? Like, mm-hmm. It would be insulting to your neighbor, right? Like, and I think that it is, like, it's an insult to the Quebec student movement to say that we can just do this tomorrow, that this isn't, like, if there is interest in kind of building or deepening social movements, that we can't see it as something that, like, happens in September. Like, we need to see it as something that happens, like, after a sustained, like, amount of organizing. And so I think that, like, the rest of Canada should be looking to Quebec, but should be recognizing and understanding the differences so that we're organizing in our local context and not organizing in a context that we think is like Quebec.
I wanted to take off sort of from where Kelly left off with the point of romanticization. I think that one of the things that's happened, particularly in people in sort of the radical left, is amongst a lot of groups, particularly a lot of sort of people who fancy themselves sort of radical parties, there's been this idea of setting up the Quebec strike as this sort of like revolutionary moment, right? That this is a revolutionary situation. And part of what I want to say is that we need to be careful to recognize that this is not the revolution, and that the people on the ground there, for the most part, are themselves not advocating for that, right? I think it's abundantly clear that it's not a revolutionary situation, and that, you know, those of us who are opposed to capitalism need to be careful not to romanticize it as such. Even CLASS, who are probably the most radical, large student organization in the country, if not really in North America, are not calling for revolution, right? They're calling for... CLASS are in fact calling for an abolition of tuition fees, but they're still looking to maintain sort of the same structures in place that we live under now. So part of the issue here as well is that struggles like these don't necessarily become generalized struggles, right? Like sometimes they start at a question of tuition fees and grow into sort of much wider struggles. A precedent in Quebec would be the McGill Francais movement in the 1960s that began as a movement in order to force McGill to be more open and welcoming to Francophone students, but also sort of called on and became this larger battle about class and ethnicity within Quebec. And I think that there's the possibility of this struggle to become generalized, but it won't necessarily become so, and certainly I think at this point hasn't already become generalized. And certainly some individual protesters might see this as a battle against austerity. But if the students arrived at a settlement tomorrow with Charest's government that froze tuition fees, I think that it's highly unlikely that the mass protest would continue and force the government to concede on wider issues. At this point, what we're looking at, I think, is that, and as I last watched CBC before coming here, in between talking about dismembered bodies in Montreal, the CBC were talking about the fact that like, it looks like there might be a settlement on the horizon that would be brought back to the membership of these various student organizations. I think that if we saw that, and if we saw an early repeal of Bill 78, the truncheon law, we pretty much would see the protests die out. I think some people would stay on the streets, but what we would not see is a continued struggle against capitalism or even a continued struggle against tuition fees themselves, right? Like, I think that so long as the Charest government says we will freeze tuition fees for the next 5 years, CLASS will not even continue on its position to abolish tuition fees altogether. So what we see is radical tactics, which is extra-parliamentary tactics in the street, but with essentially reformist goals, which is the maintenance of the status quo. So in that sense, they're even the maintenance of the status quo is itself not even reform, right? So I think that we have to be careful not to look at radical tactics as being one and the same as radical goals. And that, you can see that as well with the opposition to Bill 78, right? And essentially, like, we have to fight Bill 78. I think those of us who consider ourselves to be on the left need to fight against Bill 78 and assaults on liberty like Bill 78. I think we have a duty to protect those who are arrested under it. I think that one of the most important things we can do is certainly to provide legal support for these for anybody who's arrested under these laws. But we also have to recognize that what Bill 78 is an assault on liberal democratic values, an idea under liberal democracy of what is and isn't proper protest. So I think that we have to be careful when we defend Bill 78 that we're not happy to simply go back to a status quo which defends a sort of very limited liberal democratic sense of what constitutes free speech. And all of this is to say that it's not. This is not a slight against the organizers of this movement, right? Like, what I want to say is that what's happening in Quebec is, in fact, sort of the first step towards the politicization of a wider base, right? While the movement itself might not be revolutionary, any hope that we might have at seeing more radical structural changes to capitalism or Canadian society broadly have to start in these sorts of struggles. Indeed, most radicals, I think, find their start within these sorts of reformist movements, and it's been that way for hundreds and hundreds of years. So why is it that reformist organizing, I think, can be fertile ground for radicalization? I think that a significant aspect of this is the experience of collective struggle, and I think that's the most important thing that's going on here, is that students have seen that the masses are capable of forcing the hand of the elites. And indeed, unlike Occupy, it seems inevitable that the disruptive actions of the Quebec students will at least reduce the severity and speed of tuition fee increases. Like, there is a significant goal that will be done, that will be achieved through through radical collective action immediately. And I think that this is really important, is that they have an achievable goal that will see results that people will become empowered by. The struggle has also helped spread concrete organizing skills to massive numbers of students. People who had never organized a large meeting together have suddenly found allies to organize meetings. They figured out the logistics of what it takes to organize a meeting and get people out to it. They figured out skills in terms of things like communication, in terms of things like providing logistics for meetings. And these things are all incredibly important. Most importantly, I think that what's happened in Quebec is that students have identified themselves as a class, or at least as these sorts of working class or lower middle class students, have identified themselves as a class with separate interests from the ruling elite, right? That they've identified a set of interests that are opposed to the interests of the professional administrative class of universities. They've broken away from this idea that students and university presidents essentially want the same thing. That's bullshit. Anyone who's ever dealt with Tom Travis knows that's bullshit. the reality is the administrative class of universities is looking for something different. At the same time, they've also recognized that their interests are separate from those of sort of bourgeois politicians and those that they represent, right? That and that sort of, I think, is one of the reasons why there's been such this radical break from parliamentary politics. They're not out there supporting a specific electoral party, even though they actually have a really good option in Quebec Solidaire, who are a legitimately left-wing electoral party, who have a seat in the National Assembly. Their politics have been one of the street, and I think that that's important. I think the question we're faced with is what happens to these politics, or at least these radical extra-parliamentary tactics, when the specific locus of struggle, the question of tuition fees and the question of the truncheon law, are no longer there. And I think we've already seen a hint of what this will look like, and I think Kaylee sort of detailed this pretty well, which is we have to remember that the events of the spring are themselves the culmination of, at minimum, a half decade of organizing, right? The direct culmination of a half decade of organizing, and I would argue the culmination of a history that goes back to the Dark Ages under Duplessis, where Quebec was essentially a fascist society. I think that's one of those things that people forget. When people look back or look across, you know, the ocean to places like Greece, when people look at places like Spain, when people look at places like Portugal, people look at places like Latin America, and even when you look at Quebec, people forget that up until the mid-20th century, they essentially lived under fascist dictatorships, right? Duplessis was in power with the Union Nationale up until 1959. So there's this history of a radical politics and of a politics that has to oppose directly this sort of fascism, and not fascism in the sense that we toss the word around as sort of privileged Canadians, but actual existing fascism that they had to fight against. And so it's really important to realize that just as this event, which is in many ways larger, or at least has caught much more attention in sort of the Anglophone media than the 2007 strike, just as this strike is the culmination of the actions of the previous strike, so too will something emerge out of this. And the nightly marches through Montreal, also we have to keep in mind, were not the start, right? These nightly marches were the result of hard organizing. So what we have to do is make sure we don't put the horse before the cart and think that we can simply emulate the end result of their work without doing that work first. Also, the years of collective, not autonomous, but collective, well-organized organizing are a subjective precondition for the mass resistance movement, right? So the organizing itself is necessary not just for this struggle, but that sort of organizing is necessary if we want to engage ourselves in more radical struggles that will challenge the structures that commodify education in the first place. Okay, so this struggle is narrower in its focus than I think it's being recognized right now, right? Like, I think that we have to recognize that in a lot of ways it's about the truncheon law, it's about tuition fees, and it's not revolutionary. But that doesn't mean that I don't think it's incredibly important, and that I think that it's not that I look at this movement and don't think there's a lot to be hopeful for. And I kind of want to explain why, quickly. First is what has started as narrow opposition to a specific austerity measure is still opposition to austerity, right? It's not opposition to austerity as such, but it's still opposition to something, which is way more than most of us are doing, right? Like, most of us are just taking whatever the government throws at us. So I think that at that very level, it's not perfect, but it's a struggle. And it's a and I think that that has an incredibly powerful influence on our imaginations, but also on, again, providing a space for people to learn to organize and to discover each other, right? I think that what's important with these struggles is the ability to discover the power that we have amongst each other and together. And that really, ultimately, that's all we have, right? That's all the Quebec students have at the end of the day is each other, and they're using that to the best of their ability. The rhetoric of class has also, of the student group class, has forced Canadians to think about the concept of class as well, right? Like, I think this is an important thing, is that the rhetoric of class, I think, actually far, and Kaylee, you may disagree with this, but I think that it far outpaces the actual reality of what they're asking for and the reality of what their membership is asking for on the street. But the rhetoric of class conflict, the rhetoric of inequality, just like the rhetoric of the 1% and the 99% with Occupy, provides an imaginative space in which we can envision class conflict in a way that we haven't been able to since probably the 1970s, right? So we're talking about the fact that that our interests are different from the interests of the rich. And I think that that's important. And I think it's important that this underlines the reality that the rich are actually getting richer during this crisis by extracting labor and wealth from the rest of us, and that reality is becoming increasingly difficult to ignore. Second, the Quebec student strike shows a willingness to take politics to the street and a disdain for parliamentary politics, right? There's always a place for speaking to politicians to make incremental changes. I think that that's always important, and there will always be a space for this, but there's also a time where you have to recognize that there are limits to that tactic, and neither sort of the bourgeois sort of Quebec nationalism of the Parti Quebecois, nor the neoliberal agenda of the Charest government appears as a viable option to the actual students who are on the street, right? There's also a recognition that the protests aren't enough, right? And I think that that's one of the things we have to look at. We need to think of this not just as a protest movement, but as a resistance movement, right? And what I want to say the difference is that students in Quebec aren't saying, we're going to hold a rally a month from now to show you that we don't want you to actually raise our tuition fees. What they're saying is, if you raise our tuition fees, the city's going to fucking stop working, right? That's resistance. That's saying stop beating me up. That's fighting back. And that's what the students in Quebec are doing, which I think is incredibly important. They were not, just like Occupy Oakland, were not afraid to shut down the ports in Oakland in alliance with the radical longshoremen. So too have students in Quebec not been scared to shut down major arteries. And I think this is one of the things that gets lost in a lot of these movements, is that it's not just about protest, but about rather stopping the machinery from working, right? That sort of, I think, you know, while we often romanticize the 60s, I think we often forget that the famous line from the Berkeley Free Speech Fight was to throw your body on the gears of the machine. And that wasn't just like a symbolic thing. That was to stop the machine from working by jamming the gears up. And I think that that's one of the things that Quebec has been doing extremely well, right? Third and finally, I think that we have to recognize that this builds on a longer legacy of collective action in Quebec, that will provide the scaffolding onto which future movements can be built. So remember, Quebec has a unique history. Like I said, the Union Nationale under Maurice Duplessis was essentially a fascist government in the province until at least 1959. The student movement of the 1960s in Quebec was successful as a cultural and political movement to a degree that I would argue wasn't really present in the rest of Canada, and that Maoist groups had more traction in Quebec in the 1970s than really anywhere else in North America. And indeed, there's the radical left in Quebec maintains a strong presence. A lot of the folks that were arrested at the G20 in Toronto came from Quebec. They have a strong anarchist tradition there. There's also an incredibly strong Maoist, like Marxist-Leninist tradition there. Right? The Revolutionary Communist Party is active in Quebec in a way that isn't true really anywhere else in Canada. So now to that sort of list of this long history of sort of radical organizing tradition, we can add the spring of 2012, and hopefully it will serve as an example of collective organizing making concrete gains. What I would say our task in as Nova Scotians is to begin the process of building our own radical history and our own radical tradition, right? It's not enough to lament that we don't have that history, but rather we have to start that collective organizing and recognize that those sorts of incremental changes, that incremental organizing is itself, will not immediately bring about sort of structural change, allows us to build those sorts of relationships, to build those sorts of skills, to build that sort of consciousness. And the only way to do so is to organize ourselves, is to act in sort of a highly organized fashion, to act in a politically informed way, so that when there is sort of these objective conditions of a crisis that makes massive reformist gains, like pushing towards zero tuition fees possible, or even makes revolution itself a possibility, that we're prepared to confront that. That's not easy work, obviously, and it's been decades of doing it in Quebec, but I guess that would be sort of, if we were asking what is to be done, I think that that's sort of starting that sort of long radical history and building on that history that already exists in Nova Scotia is a first step.